Welcome once again to another fantastic episode of the Business Creators Radio Show. We help business creators like you win at the game of business and marketing so you can thrive from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion and make a difference for your community, market, and audience. Please take a moment and visit our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com. You will find hundreds of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to you as a business creator and links to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes delivered straight to you. And now for today's episode. My name is Adam Homey. I am your host and I am honored by your wise decision to tune in and invest in yourself today. It's great to have goals. And it's great to set goals, but there's something missing in the conversation about goal setting. I set goals to a degree as well. And part of my journey over the past few months especially has been setting goals above and beyond the month or the year. I've recently embarked on the first stages of a five-year transformational plan for my life and my business. So I'm thinking long-term in a way that I haven't really thought about that ever really up until now. Not that I've been exactly a fly by the seat of your pants sort of guy, but I haven't quite thought about the long term as profoundly as I've been doing lately. So for this reason, and because this is something that I know is of interest based on listener comments, people I've spoken with who listen and follow the Business Creators Radio Show on various syndicator networks and tune in every Tuesday, we are going to cover today the missing half of goal setting, and I am so excited to introduce to you today's guest, Megan Dahl, whose name I hope I'm pronouncing correctly, but she'll correct me in a moment if I'm wrong. So let me just tell you a little bit about Megan. Light bulb moments are her favorite thing. So when her clients finally see what the numbers mean, it's like watching one of those videos where colorblind people put on those special glasses and can see color for the first time. It's magical. So thinking about the way those magical moments have appeared in Megan's life and how she knows she's on the path that God has designed for her, things that start as devastating disasters turn into something beautiful. And it's these transformations that can make her believe that all things are possible. It's become her mission to help you have those types of epiphanies as well. So there's so much more we're going to discover about her, but I'm going to let her tell you herself in a moment. So let's introduce her. Come on in, Megan. The weather's fine. And we're so happy to have you here today. And I was so eager to jump into today's episode. Normally in the green room, before we get started, I make a point of attempting to say the guest's name out loud because in most cases I've seen the name, but I've never heard it. Did I say it right?
No, okay. I'm sorry you didn't. It's it's Dolly, like Hello Dolly.
Hello Dolly. Okay. Yeah. Well, we all know the song Hello Dolly, and Believe it or not, there are people who say that they've never heard of such a song and they wonder why I have such old man interests. Like,
oh,
come
that's
on.
So sad for them.
Come on. If you don't know Hello Dolly, no matter what age you are, I mean, have you ever installed WordPress before? Goodness gracious. I mean, even people who aren't coders have installed WordPress once or twice. So Megan Dolly, now that we got her name right. Awesome. Before we dive into this thing about the missing half of goal setting, what we like to do here on the show, and you've seen this yourself because I know you've tuned in from time to time on your own, is we like to take a step back and discover more about you as an individual and what's brought you to where you are, serving from your intersection of your brilliance and your passion, making a difference for your community, market, and audience in your own words. So if you could take us a bit through that, that'd be great.
Yeah, actually, I kind of fell into accounting completely accidentally. I went to college and I studied political science and theater. And my professor, he said, when I was taking the LSAT, he said, Megan, I know you. You are going to love law school and you are going to hate practicing law. I was like, all right, won't do that. Went about my merry way. My husband and I, on a whim, moved down to Nashville for a while, came back home. And my mom had a business and she's like, hey, since you're not doing anything, how about you come do my books for me? And here's a book on how to do accounting for non-accountants. And I was struck. It was so fascinating how clean things were and everything had its place and things balanced out. And it was just, it felt perfect. It felt like something just feels when you know it's right. And so,
yeah.
And so from there, I went off and went and got my master's in accounting, discovered that the world of accounting is not accounting when it comes to like the big firms where you're doing auditing and tax and all those terrible, horrible things that God bless the people that do it, because I will never do it ever, ever again. And really found a niche for myself working with businesses that business owners, namely, that just really struggle with, where do these numbers even fit? Why isn't this just overhead? Can I please just do the thing that I'm good at? Can somebody just take care of this for me? And taking care of that for them and making them understand what it is they need to know and, you know, making sure they're aware of what's going on. So it was just kind of little bits and pieces that fell, like, try this. Nope, that didn't work. Try a different route. Ooh, that worked really well. Let's see if I can duplicate that again with my next employer or whatever that may be. So accounting was just something I fell into. Nothing I ever made a goal of going and doing. Just turns out that I was kind of good at it, I guess.
Had to get there somehow. Did you just sort of stumble into it, or did you have like, you know, plans or goals or something?
I didn't. No, that's the thing. I absolutely did not. I had no direction or goals. It was just like, oh, I'll do this thing because maybe that's what expected of me. Or yeah, I'll try this. And oh, I'm good at that. Oh, I'm not good at that. And accounting is what evolved out of that. And so being in the private world of the accounting, you know, working for an energy company and then working for a furniture company and ultimately going out on my own, like I finally understood that I just see numbers differently than other people. And so when there's these nerdy accountants on one side, you know, the typical antisocial nerd accountant that people think of in sitcoms, I have a creative bent on that, I guess you would say. I can see like blobs and numbers forming. My grandpa once asked my sister when I was about 3 years old, they were doing division drills. My sister was in like third grade. And my grandpa says, Aaron, what is 12 divided by 4? And I piped up and I said, it's 3. And my grandpa said, how did you know that? And I said, because you fold 12 in half and then you fold it in half again and you have 3. And so that's just the way it works. And it turns out that creativity and math are very highly aligned. It's just not how it's used every day, unfortunately.
Well, that's very interesting. We're going to get into that. I know that a lot of the accountants that I've encountered, including my own CPA, do not fall into that stereotypical nerdy type thing going on. In fact, it's just yet another example of how social programming tells us that we're supposed to perceive people and things. No wonder I encourage people and I help people launch their own podcasts, because you got to get your own voice out there and not let others tell you what you're supposed to think, tell you what you're supposed to feel, tell you what you're supposed to like, tell you what you're supposed to enjoy, tell you what you're supposed to be. So yeah, I'm an accountant. So I am one of those, I'm classified as the thinker. I'm definitely not a socializer. You wouldn't call me a relator. And as far as director, well, I can do that for 3 months during tax season, but I'm really a thinker. And you said, hey man, how you doing? I would break that down into a 27 level Gantt chart in response. No, that's not how it is. God. See, I got into, it's interesting. You said you were a political science major. So was I. And I found that the value of that education paid off for me when I became an entrepreneur, as it taught me critical thinking and writing skills that you don't find in a lot of other disciplines. It's considered a softer discipline, whereas accounting is a hard discipline, or you know, medical school or law school or something like that. That's hard. That's specific. But the idea of being able to communicate and being able to influence, the main improvement I would make on political science programs is to take some of the partisanship out of it, and also to add curriculum on influence, persuasion, and neurolinguistic programming, because it gives us an unbelievable opportunity to shape our environment and make the world a better place with us in it. I was not, I think you said you were a theater minor.
Theater major. I got a double major there. Yeah.
Oh, double major. Yeah. See, I had minors. I had a minor in Middle East studies with a focus on the history and the politics of the Middle East. And just because of all the courses I took over my major and my minor, I had one of those on paper history minors where just because of all the other courses I took, I'd already done it. So all I had to do was sign the paper. Like, yeah, give me another minor. I'll take it.
Right, might as well.
So yeah, that Middle East studies minor. Yeah. It makes me a real interesting conversation companion when you have these Middle East experts who yesterday were COVID experts, and the day before that were constitutional experts, and the day before that wrote the book on emoluments, all of a sudden attempt to educate me about what's going on in the Middle East. Like, you've probably never even met somebody from there. I taught a class full of people from there. I mean, so what's, and what makes that, and that experience, and part of what attracted me to that minor of studying the Middle East was, as part of my general education requirement, one of my options was to take the intro course. And what opened it up for me was I was blessed to have a professor, Dr. Arthur Goldschmidt, very well known in that study. In fact, I think he's still somewhat active. I know he's written one of the main textbooks in that field. His ability to explain and analyze things in such a way that it allowed you to see a new point of view without having to reject what you'd been told up until then or admit that you were wrong about anything has actually become sort of the foundation of everything I do in business, and is one of the pillars of my book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy. So if you want me to put the TLDR on the last 4 minutes of this interview, what it basically boils down to is, you don't know what you're missing until you see it, and you may not have the tools to even know what you're looking for. So, the missing half of goal setting. What's the missing half?
The missing half is probably the scary half, maybe.
Yeah.
The missing half is putting what you have as your goal, putting a number to it, and putting a date on it.
Okay.
Okay? A lot of people like, okay, I'm going to tell you a story. So, I have a friend who lives down south, and her family lives up here in South Dakota where she grew up. And for 7 years, she's been saying, in 3 years, we're moving back home. In 3 years, we're moving back home. She's been saying the same thing. 7 years ago, she was saying, in 3 years, we're moving back home. Today, she's saying, in 3 years, we're moving back home. So it's not so much about them putting a deadline on anything. It's the lack of no understanding what it means, like what the trigger is going to be for them to actually make that move. And not only that trigger, there's pieces. It's not like a one-time thing that just all of a sudden happens, like, oh, it's 3 years later, pack the van, kids, we're going back home to South Dakota. No, that's not what it is. There are certain thresholds that you could reach along the way to really ensure that things are happening and protect the progress that they're making towards this goal of really, really happening in 3 years. And so a lot of times people are, when they're doing, especially, I'm not supposed to say this time of year, but when people start doing their goal setting for the year, they're like, okay, in 12 months from now, I am going to have my business be 4 times as big. I'm going to have a new car in the garage and da 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 da. And it kind of dwindles away, right? What their expectation is almost like, it's like this thing, because I said it's going to happen in 12 months, it's going to just appear in 12 months. And that's not what really happens.
Did you assume the lotus position on your couch and open the windows and outstretch your arms and you declared that too? Because I'll tell you, I tried that. They said manifest $1 million and it'll come. So I opened my window and sat on the couch in a lotus position because I figured I don't have my $1 million yet, but somebody's telling me I should try it. Hey, maybe it'll work. My worst case scenario here is I sit on in a lotus position on the couch for a few minutes with my arms outstretched. I lose nothing and I potentially gain $1 million. Punchline. I did not get $1 million.
Weird. Yeah, it turns out that $1 million is made up of $1,000, you know? And what happens is when we put these goals out there, we have these goals, we don't recognize the progress as we make it. And so that progress is actually, let's say, reinvested.
Yeah.
Or that when it's not recognized as progress towards a goal, we're using it for something else. We're using it to, oh, what's the shiny object over here? Or, oh, how about let's just go on a quick trip to, you know, the cities where I'm from. That's what we do. We go on a trip to the cities for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, go catch a Vikings game, whatever it is. And so all of this progress that, yes, your subconscious is trying to make this progress. Well, if it's not recognized for what it is and it's not protected once you make that progress and set it aside or however we're deciding to protect it, it's really easy to, you know, piss it down your pants.
Yeah.
So I guess overall, when it comes to these goals, I like, oh man, you had me almost like standing on top of a table, like pumping my fist in the air when you were talking earlier about like, do your own thing. Nobody can tell you what to do or tell you what to think. And the same thing goes for your goals. I don't want anybody to be sitting there and telling you what you should have as your goals or what you, you know, what the right goals are. I am all about like being super curious and being bravely creative on the way to accomplishing these goals. And so when I sit down with my clients, I want them to finish the thought that comes along with their goal setting. Like, okay, this far, you told me that you want to have enough in your business that you can be working 30 hours a week and that you are going to start building that house that your family has always wanted. And you have a 36-month timeline on this. Okay.
I have 58 out of my 60 months left to accomplish a very similar thing. So I'm with you there. And, you know, as you were speaking there, I can't help this. I'm reminded of somebody, a colleague of mine for a long time, and she joined a mastermind group. And she said, I have a coaching business. I have 10 coaching clients right now, or whatever number was, maybe it was 15 or 20. I don't know, some relatively small number. But the idea is she had a limited number of coaching clients that she worked with, and she wanted to, and she enjoyed the work with them. She was getting pretty good fees from them. She was making a good living off it to begin with. And one of her goals for what she wanted to accomplish with that experience was to develop multiple streams of revenue. So she barely had the, how else can I monetize my intellectual, and they start cutting off. You're doing your own coaching. Why are you doing this? Why are you only charging $500 a call? You need to put a zero on that and charge $5,000 a call. And you should only be working with two of those clients and everybody else should be sub-coaching, working with some other coaches who work for you where you get 60% of the revenue in a 60-40 split.
Can I just flip those people off now? Or
well, and she is the most gentle, mild-mannered person that you will ever encounter in your life, and I think she actually did tell them to fuck off. Okay. Because that was just not only and the way I, and if you notice the variance in my tonalities when I tell you about her, you notice my tonality when I speak of her changes. So some of the energy that she puts off is now permeating through me. She's one of those heart-centered, you know, connecting with the universe, seeking the positive vibes type person. And that onslaught was just so counter to not only what she was asking for, but also the core of her intersection of her brilliance and her passion and what she brought to the world as part of it being a better place with her in it, that she had that type of visceral reaction to it.
Yeah,
nothing. And it goes, and the reason I bring that up is because here you have a classic case of somebody being told what their goals should be based on platitudes, based on metaphors that were written by other people, based on cliches, and based on somebody else's definition of what success is. Her definition of success is that she could keep on with that little group of coaching clients charging $500 a call till the cows come home, but have other things going on that required very little involvement that added additional revenue to support her having the business that she was already enjoying. But instead she got, oh, add a zero to that. No, well, we don't need actual marketing research to find out. It's just, you're worth $5,000, so add a zero to every coaching client you have. And if they reject it, then they deserve to be fired by you. What?
Yeah, you
What?
know, and that type of
What?
advice is
What?
just like, I don't know if it's everybody copying each other because that's what they heard the big boys say or something like
Yeah,
that, but
that's.
it's not even in, has anybody even paused to say, hang on a second, the people that you want to serve, would they even pay that much? Would, I
Yeah.
mean, what does that do to your self-esteem if you're going to be charging that much? If it's, there's so many outside factors that people are more than happy to come in and give you more advice than what you really need,
Right.
based on zero insights into who you are as a person.
You know, I've seen so many folks who launched information products, and some of them even bought things like Jeff Walker's product launch formula, which I'm a customer and I love the thing myself. I've made tons of money with it on my own. They built the product according to the specifications. We'll just use product launch formula as an example that a lot of us understand. Designed the whole thing based upon, the offering based on what would be optimized for that platform. Went through the whole thing with the sideways sales letter and the seed launch and the one question survey and the open doors, closed doors, everything in between, that sort of thing. Maybe sold one course at $497. And so, you know what, you want to guess what their next move was?
Start from scratch on something else.
No, we'll just increase the price of the course to $19.97, and
Oh.
we'll sell more that way because people will perceive it of being higher value. I know three people personally that that was actually their next step after they tried to sell something for $500 and it didn't work out. Say, oh, we'll just quadruple the price of it and more people will buy it because it'll seem more valuable.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
Oh, okay.
there's also a thing called packaging. You can actually sell the same amount of stuff or more in some cases if you don't sell it all in one package. Think about when you go clothes shopping and your goal is to buy a jacket. Do you sometimes walk out with like five other things too?
Of course, of
Yeah,
course.
naturally, because you got a new jacket, now you want a new shirt, and a few other things you see. Maybe you want a scarf to go with it, a new set of gloves, a hat. And since you got the jacket, it's because you got the jacket that now you want the other things. Now, would it be as attractive if I were to tell you that I had this deluxe jacket plus bundle? That included the jacket, the coat, the scarf, the gloves, the three t-shirts, and the umbrella.
Probably.
For some people, maybe so.
Maybe. Yeah.
But
If I
could it
get the
all, but could it
customer.
also, yeah, but could it also seem overwhelming to people because all they believe they need right now is the jacket?
Absolutely.
I cover some of this in my book, Groundhog Day is an Event, Not a Business Strategy, which everybody should buy because it's an awesome book. It's my show, I can say it.
Absolutely.
That one of the reasons that people may have challenges closing the deal is because the offer they're making is too damn big. Think about it. If your pitch for a home study course is it has 21 DVDs, or well, let's translate to 2020. 21 streaming videos with audio versions, with complete transcripts and fill in the blank worksheets. You may drive some people away because they say, when am I going to watch 21 videos?
Absolutely.
And for that reason, they throw the whole thing out. But what if I took one piece of that course, sold it as a self-liquidating offer, attached a bump offer, an upsell, and a double upsell to it, and walked people through a customer journey, but did it quickly? See, that's the other thing about upsells is they tend to be more effective when you do them fast. When you go to buy that coat in the store, you're not going to come back later for the hat, the scarf, the gloves. You're going to pick them up while you're there.
True statement.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So bringing this back to the missing half of goal setting, it's great to set goals. It's great to say, well, yeah, I'm going to just 10x my coaching business by adding a zero to the rates I already charge. And hey, if all my customers leave, well, they're just a bunch of cheapskates anyway, and who needs them? I'll just go get new. Yeah, right. That doesn't work that way. Just like setting a goal and say, you know, as you said, in 12 months, we're going home. All right. So what does that mean? And what steps? You know, for 8 years, I was leaving Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But I sat there for 8 years. This year I'm going to leave. This year I'm going to go somewhere else. This year I'm going to move here. This year I'm going to move there. So I lived in an apartment, which was nice, but not what I would have ideally picked because it didn't allow pets, so I couldn't have my own cats. So I went 8 years without cats off this. And you know what ultimately got me out of there is I made the decision when I had a dream about my previous boss who I'd worked for when I was in college, my part-time job.
Oh my gosh, this is what you were talking with Tracy about.
Yeah, see, now we're starting to remember the episode. So for those of us who didn't check out the episode about me having conversations with dead people, yeah, basically what happened is this guy appeared in my dream and he said, I'll see you in Las Vegas. I'm thinking, why is my boss from at that point 15 years ago saying I'll see you in Las Vegas? So I looked him up. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, it's been 15 years since I've really seen him. I'll give him a call. And I looked him up on the internet and I found myself reading his obituary, which stated that he was being buried that morning.
He was kicking your butt from the grave, man.
Basically,
what are you doing here still?
So that happened right after Independence Day. I think that happened like July 6th, July 7th. And that put me on a different set of thinking. It's like the age I am now, that's how old he was when I worked for him.
Mm.
And it's been 8 years since I've been leaving this place, but another year goes by, another year goes by. So it's July 9th. My lease on my current apartment ends on October 31st. Can I be out of here by then? It was easy for me to figure that one out, which goes back to your point of, well, this year we'll do it. This year we'll do it. But then when I set a specific timeline, so now we're going July, August, September, October. I have almost 4 months. I have a lot of the money I'd need to pull this off right now. And I can be packed up and out of here in 4 months. I wasn't married. I didn't have any hard commitments holding me down. So I did it. And it was easier because I could see it as something that was immediate. Like, this is 4 months away. Mm. I'm doing this. I best get on getting the steps done.
Right. And you know,
just like with upsells, and that's why I meant, and that's why it took us down that segue there for a few minutes. The upsells tend to be more effective when they're immediate, because if you try and come back with them 2 weeks later, the person is in many cases already mentally moved on.
Right, you have that momentum behind you. You have that momentum exactly. Working in the right direction.
So, offer, bump offer, upsell. That's where you do it. You take the big package, you break into four small pieces, you show them how their current investment is going to be even bigger, better with the next piece. Just like a jacket is so much better with a hat and a scarf.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it. So 4 months. Hey, that lease expires October 31st, no matter what. So I'm either out of here or I'm here another year. What's it going to be?
Yeah, you really hit
that
on something
made it
there.
Easy.
Yeah, like making it palatable and feasible. Like, oh, yeah. Maybe this isn't nearly as hard as I thought. Once upon a time, back when I was still working for somebody, I was their controller, and the jackpot on the lottery was something like $936 million. I mean, something ridiculous.
Right.
And I spent the entire day of work building an Excel worksheet of what I would do with that money. It was like 24 tabs long. It started with putting in the jackpot and all these algorithms with tax laws in there for how much I could give to whom without a tax, you know, without a tax burden on them, and how much taxes I would have to cover for them if I gave them more, and who those people were, and like what degree of connection were they, like my parents were closer than my nieces and nephews who wouldn't need as much because they're younger, da, 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 da. And this whole thing is like the foundations we would start, the nonprofits that we would support, the long-term savings of how much I would just want to have waiting for me when I turn 66 at a, yeah, you know, 4% return rate, the short-term savings of how much I would want to live on, da, 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 the vacations, I mean, the homes, everything was in this worksheet because I spent an entire day building it. So why not?
You're an accountant. You can't help it. Oh, what did I just do?
Come on. Now, Excel is sexy. Excel is magically sexy.
Ever since they added that extra X after the S.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, they're great. But so like the ultimate thing was after I had these 24 tabs and I was just like immersed in this imaginary land, and where I had these vacations planned out and everything, and I sat down, I was looking at this and I was going, okay, but once we get home from the vacations and we're in our gorgeous home, like then what how am I spending my time? Like this whole exercise actually came me full circle, brought me full circle back to where I began of like, okay, that's great. But what are you going to do with your time? What do you want to do? What's the delightful thing in your day? And how much ultimately would it take to live within that delight now, instead of having to wait to have $963 million fall in my lap?
Sure.
And that was like, I don't know why it was that, but that shook me to my core of it actually wasn't that much. And what I would do with my time isn't that different than what I would be doing anyway. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, hang on a second. I am super close to this. Sure, granted, I'm not coming off of 2 months tutoring around Europe in a, you know, this massive house out on this dream land or whatever, but yeah, like the stuff that matters was right there at my fingertips. I just need to reach out and grab it. And so that was like the beginning of finding delight and making sure that the goals were really stuck into my core of with where I like to say that I'm an infinite font of love. I just love on everybody all the time, especially my clients. And so like these values were tied to my core of love, and what I was doing with it every day, day in and day out, was just like, huh, this is doable. It's grabbable. Just like you moving to Las Vegas in October. It was right there in front of me. All I had to do was step out and do it.
That's correct. After I got here to Las Vegas, you can imagine our winters are usually so bad that sometimes we have to put on a fall jacket. So I made a comment in that first January after I was here about how miserable it was in the wintertime, that, you know, even though the sun was shining brightly and there were no clouds in the sky, I had to put on a jacket and a sweatpants to sit outside. So I was doing this just to, say, yes, I wasn't built for cold weather. So I'm in a place where it's warmer weather now. And, a little good natured ribbing at the people from back in Pennsylvania where I came from. They were at that moment in the middle of a blizzard.
Yeah.
I had somebody send me a direct message in Facebook telling me that they felt that my post was, among other things, racist, discriminatory, a form of oppression, and all other kinds of stuff, because it somehow, if somehow was a calculated attack on people who can't just pick up and move whenever they want.
Oh, and here I thought you were going to tell me that they were kidding. It was tongue in cheek, but they were real, huh?
No, they meant it. They were serious. That the fact that I posted that somehow made me an evil person who had just shown various isms. Now, you know, I wrote back to him and I said, oh, thank you so much for sharing with me. I love you and I appreciate your passion, and I'm so honored you took. No, it didn't quite go that way. I responded to them in public, tagging them, saying that, yeah, I stand exactly by what I said. And if it's going to take you 3 years to make a change in your life, let's say you want to find a new job, but the prospects for finding a new job is it's going to take you 6 months to find a job that's worth jumping to. Let's say you want to move to a different place in the country, but between your commitments, your house, your kids, your family, elderly parent, whatever it is, going to take you 3 years to get there, then it's going to take you that long. What are your choices? Are you going to begin that journey today? Or are you going to hold yourself back? Because if you wait until tomorrow, that new job is now 6 months and 1 day away. That new place to live is now 3 years and 1 day away, and so on and so forth. So instead of complaining about me, take some action in your own life. Embrace that it could take a while. Embrace that it couldn't be easy. And this is where we transition to something you mentioned earlier, Megan, is break it into pieces if necessary. Because you mentioned the thing about the big, hairy, audacious goal, which is great, but then we have to honor things and measure things along the way. So that's where we transition in, according to my intricate plan for this interview.
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that you mentioned just triggered something in my brain too. And it's not just about like acknowledging that it might be hard, but admitting to yourself why you think it's hard. For some people, it's, am I outshining my mentor if I do this? Like, what is the little tiny voice in your head telling you why you shouldn't want what you want? And that's like one of the biggest problems I come across with my clients is that when it comes to wanting, they don't feel, let's say, worthy. Sometimes like, I shouldn't want. Like, I don't even, sometimes they don't even know what to want.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I like to break through that. That's really a heartbreaking place to start. But when we can get to the other side of that, that's super powerful.
Okay. Something intuitively is coming to me here. And Megan, I have to ask, who the hell do you think you are? Pause. Now pause. See what I did there? I got everybody sitting up in their seats because I, whoa.
Oh my gosh, you just got me so excited, Adam. Oh my gosh.
Now think about how me saying that just made you jump. Like, what did I just do? So imagine you're a child and you want to have nice clothes. You want to have nice toys. Now let's say you get to be 16, 17 years old. You want to have a nice car. And somebody says to you, who the hell do you think you are that you deserve something like that? Or you get a nice car, a nice house, and they say, who the hell do you think you are that you deserve something like that? Imagine hearing that again and again and again and again. What is that going to do to you?
It's going to start making you think, who the hell do I think I am?
And what's it going to do to your goal setting?
Don't reach. That's not meant for me.
Uh-huh.
Put your hand back.
Put your hand back. Keep your hands down. Put your head down. Know your role. Know your place. I'm thinking of somebody I know who 2 years ago met the President of the United States, and they could not believe they actually got to meet the President of the United States. But they remembered being told, oh, you'll never actually meet the president. Don't ever dream of something like that.
That's heartbreaking.
And in their case, it fueled them that actually became a goal to meet a president. And they did. But I've heard myself several times, oh, don't ever aspire to something like that. You'll never get to meet those people. You'll never get to hang out with those people. And all that does is make me want to meet and hang out with those people and create things to make it happen. I mean, I've had friends that I wouldn't have dreamed were within access to me when I was growing up because I got all that. Who the hell do you think you are? You'll never have that. Don't even think about that. That's not what you're destined for. In the real world, that never happens.
And yeah, sometimes it's not even explicitly said, right? It's just insipid. It comes from underneath. It digs tunnels like worms through other ways, not just words. But that's interesting that you say that, Adam, because that's like one of my favorite I don't want to say it's one of my favorite phrases to say it like that, but it's one of these things to stop people in their tracks and say, now, who do you think you are? And build on that intrinsic something inside of you. Forget who the hell they think that, who the hell do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? So what we're doing is we're actually using the same words.
Yes.
And we're shifting the tonalities to create a new definition.
Yes. That's why I was like, that's my phrase. How did he know? Yes. Who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And then put some power behind it.
People were thinking they were tuning in this interview. One thing, they're just going to get the missing half of goal setting, which is why we got that one out of the way early. And now we've been spending the past 20 minutes developing that concept, part of what gets in the way of that missing half of goal setting and part of what makes it possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm all for that. So, so let's say that you were working with somebody. There's a two-part question I want to ask you, and we're going to do this one part at a time. So aside from everything we've covered, and if we've pretty much covered it and a recap is in order, what mistakes do you see business owners make? Perhaps something we haven't covered yet, perhaps a recap, when it comes to this whole idea of goal setting. We know that the answer is specific date, specific time, that sort of thing, but what else is there?
Protect it. Once you put a number on it, put up in place structures to protect the progress. You know, whether you want to call it Dave Ramsey or profit first or investing or planning, but to have a plan in place that says, okay, even if I'm starting with a dollar a day, that's what I'm starting with. I'm starting with a dollar a day and I'm protecting it. Yeah. And I'm not going to erode it by using it for something else.
Right. A dollar a day that's $365.
Yep.
I mean, can you think of five things in your life that you spend less than $365 a year on? Can you think of 10 things you routinely buy in your life on an annual basis? When you take the 10 of them, they add up to $365 or less. That's the whole thing with the Dave Ramsey envelope method. And I've discovered, I don't use that for everything, but there are certain things I do use it for. For example, my budget for cigars. I love going to the cigar shop, but I also know that I can go a little bit crazy with it. So I actually take an X amount of money and I set it aside for that purpose, put it in an envelope.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
So even if somebody has this issue where they can't see the entire goal, even if they're not in a position where they're able to necessarily plan every piece of it, they can start with pieces of it. And it can come up with something as simple as, here's a real easy one. You know, I get whaled every year at Christmas buying all these presents. Why can't we all just like agree to like just send each other cards? Why do we have to send these stupid gifts? We're all adults.
Where's the fun in that?
Okay, some people may think that. So now let's take that one step further. Sometimes folks who feel that way do so because they get financially whaled by having to buy all those presents. And then they see the reality is they're waiting to get some cash presents coming from those same people they're buying the gifts for so they can pay off the credit card. So what if, one small step, they recognize that their Christmas budget for this year is going to be $600. That's what it's going to cost to buy gifts for everybody. So every month they save $60. And the end of the year, they have $720. Not only do they cover everybody else without any hit on their credit card, but then they get to buy themselves a nice present besides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regardless of your situation, can you come up with $60? That's $2 a day. That's $14 a week. Have you spent $14 on something today?
Not yet today. I haven't been out of the house.
Not yet today, but you could. You could very.
It will easily happen.
Mm-hmm. And you could very easily end up buying something before the end of the day.
Yeah, I think we throw out more of that in groceries
As soon as we're done here on the Business Creators Radio Show, somebody may call you up and invite you to lunch, and you say yes. There's $25 right there.
Yep.
So the point being is, if you can find $2 a day, you can completely eliminate the Christmas rush on your expenses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you may not be able to do that for every area of your life, but think of one or two areas, implement it, and start building upon it. And I think this goes back again to goal setting, which is recognizing the small steps along the way. So for someone in my situation where I recognized I had 4 months to get out of my apartment, what would be some of my steps? Some of my steps would be to estimate how much money I'd need to make the move, make sure I had it. That was one step. Another step would be to make a plan to get rid of all my stuff. There's another thing. Another would be to find a business reason to be in Las Vegas so that I could write off my entire home hunting trip as a business expense. I did that too.
Yeah. And once you start like pre-seeing yourself in those certain scenarios, like I do a cash flow forecast with my clients that like, okay, now that we're going to put these protections in place, let's see what's actually going to happen over the next 6 to 12 months with everything else and how it can still fall into place. How things are going. So you're not just like, oh, in 3 months, there's this surprise that's going to happen because you forgot that your domains all renew in 3 months all at the same time. And you have a ton of domains that charge you $1,000 a year. Right.
Yeah. Now that's another one for business owners.
Yeah. Yeah. Those annual things that come around, you know, just taking those surprises out of there. And so you can see yourself, even if it's on paper, you can see yourself in 3 months of, oh yeah, I've got that thing coming up and I know that my dips in my business come that time of year and my peaks come at that time of the year. And letting it play out in your brain before it gets to the point where like, oh man, I'm in a tight spot. Man, that pot of money over there that I've been saving looks really, really good. Find out where your tight spots are. Where are the temptations going to be? Let's talk about them now before you're biting your nails, trying not to dip into that pot.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Domains. Because how many of us buy domains that we just hold on to? And then we know that we could probably just like wipe the slate clean with a lot of them, but then we hold on to them for an indefinite period of time.
Yeah.
What if this matters someday? What if I need this domain for something someday? What if I actually do this thing someday? And I have a couple clients that have reduced their domain ownership down to less than a dozen domains, and it covers everything they have. And do you want those two clients? I got them down to less than a dozen domains. You want to know how I coached them through that?
Absolutely.
It's real easy. I told them, if you're going to have that domain, you got to get a website up on it now. Otherwise, you put it on non-auto renew and let it go.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of purging that gets done on the expense side of things when you stop saying, I might need that.
Right.
Or what
and,
if?
Oh, and there's another piece of this too, because again, now we go to layers. I introduced this to these two clients right after I guided them through a process of taking down a bunch of websites they didn't really need. So I built upon the success of, now I need less hosting. Now I'm paying for less bandwidth. Now I have better consolidation for my backlinks. Now I'm not having to worry about keeping 45 WordPress installations updated. Whew, that feels nice.
Yeah.
But now we build the even nicer thing of, now I don't have this big domain bill, or, and this is another common thing for those who, like me, do their own QuickBooks entries. Now I don't have to enter those damn GoDaddy charges 19 times a month out of the ACH section. And you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Oh, you know, there's a rule for that.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the rules with QuickBooks sometimes work. And because, you know, I've done some of this myself. And sometimes these companies, they'll it's like every time the charge comes through, it's reworded differently. So you have to remap it anyway.
Yeah.
And then either way, it's like $8.97 over and over and over again. It feels like you've entered it 900 times, even though you only own 45 domains.
Yeah. And that takes out a lot of should All of these shoulds, like, oh, I've got these domains. Oh, I've got these websites that I should be doing something with. And ugh, remove the possibility, man, and give your heart and brain some R&R.
Yeah. Yeah, I had I was holding on to some domains for some titles for books I was thinking about writing years ago. And I held on to them and held on to them thinking, well, sometime I might get around to that. And then I realized my business has evolved in a different direction. I'm letting this go. And, you know, at this point, if somebody else beats me to it, they've had 8 years to beat me to it already. What's another year going to make?
Yeah. That's a good point.
Because we can't do it all. So I guess that's the first piece is, you know, looking at the mistakes that they make. Now, we've already touched in several ways upon the process. And the way that feels like we've done it is like we're assembling a puzzle on the dining room table. And we built out the frame. And we've put in several patches where we found that the pieces fit together. And now we just need to fill in some of the little gaps here and there and the area surrounding in the upper left so that we can make the complete puzzle. So let's do that now in answering what I think is the final piece of this, which is, you know, what is the process you would take a client through if they came to you wanting help with goal setting?
The first thing is I want to get to the bottom of where they're at now. I mean, that's just right. The obvious first step of like, where are you and how did you get here in the first place? How are things feeling financially? I like to have husbands and wives together, even though if it's just the wife that owns the business or the husband that owns the business, I want to know what their understanding is of what's going on. And then ultimately when it comes to setting the goals, you know, this might sound a little off topic, but I find that my clients, they know their customers really well. Yeah. And they know their product really well, but the why between the two, why their customers are drawn to their particular product, sometimes they're missing a key component in there. Like they don't see the whole picture from the client's perspective.
Right.
And inside of that, and once we find that little glimmer that it's like the answer to why they're in business in the first place. And then it finally connects and it clicks. I want to find that delight for them. I want to find the impact that they truly are making out in the world because people don't always get to see it. It's actually quite rare when you get to see the full impact of what you do out in the world. And to connect to that delight, into that purpose, and to reignite what you're doing in the first place, that's where we connect to your core values. And why your goals are your goals. And now we can start talking about the monetary without being like, oh, I can't want, or it's not, I'm not, I shouldn't want stuff like that. Da, da, da,
who the
whatever.
Hell do you think you are?
Who the blah, hell do blah, you blah, think blah, you blah, are? Yeah. Right. Like, now, look and, who and, you and, are. And look who at the, who you are.
Look at who you are. Same words, different tonality.
Yeah.
Big meaning shift, big paradigm shift. And yeah, I think that circles back to what we've touched upon several times in this elliptical yet fun conversation, which is your goals.
Yeah,
you are like my friend, the coach who got set upon because she asked about multiple streams of revenue, and all these people in her mastermind attacked her current stream of revenue and told her to do stuff with it that would destroy it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So her goal was not to have $5,000 coaching clients. Her goal was to enjoy the prosperous business she already created and build upon that by creating new streams of revenue that did not require her to be involved full time, that would allow her to continue to bask in the glory of her goals being met while creating her wealth for generations.
Yeah.
Hey, we can talk about leverage and outsourcing all you want, but if that's what you like, it's what you do. I mean, my business is the same way. I have a handful of clients I keep close to myself, and I'm not going to build a team of little atoms because I enjoy the work. But I also recognize that that's not scalable. So instead of saying I'm going to throw my business model away and just put something scalable instead, I'm looking at other things that I do, new things that I do. Those are all scalable. Those are all designed with me not being actively involved in mind.
Yeah, and some things that you can still enjoy too, right? Like even if you have to manage a little piece of it, you're not going to hate managing that little piece of it.
Like our podcast booking agency, which has a few clients at this time, I don't want to do pitches. So I made an alliance with somebody who thrives off that stuff. And it's just so much joy to check my inbox and see that another one of our clients has got booked on another show. That is just so awesome to me. But you know what's really awesome? It's the fact I don't have to do anything. And we laugh about this. You know, that's great. And what's awesome is I have brought somebody in alliance with my business where that is them serving from the intersection of their brilliance and their passion. So they are going to thrive at it, and they're going to be better at it than I am. I create the business model that delivers the service. As long as everybody's satisfied, I've done my job. So my 15 cents on a dollar I make in that deal is worth it.
And above and beyond that, I mean, supporting the employee that you have, you now have clients that are supported. I mean, the ripple effect is out there, right? You can start to see that whole ripple effect of all the people acting in their zone of genius, if you will, and getting to do the thing that they put on this earth to do. Go do it. Rock at it. Stand up on that table and pump your fist, man.
I know. And you know, when I see that, and I shared that as an example of that, does bring me joy. Like just this morning, I got an email from our booking coordinator that said, okay, we got this client. They're now booked on this show, and we just got this other show that wants to interview this other client. And I see that, and I mean, candidly, the joy of it is I didn't have to do it. So I get to build that type of business, which is a leverage business, while keeping my personal coaching and consulting business, which is a me business. You can have both.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
And so that's what I mean, but I think that's what we both mean by owning our goals. So yes. We're actually pretty much the top of the hour here. We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to give one of those minutes to you and tell us a little bit. I imagine we have some people leaning in right now that recognize that through the storytelling approach of our conversation, we've uncovered a few things, we've bookmarked a few things, and we've exposed a few things that they may recognize are places they can now powerfully explore to create and discover new success avenues for themselves. If they wish to do that now, how do they go about it? What do they have to look forward to once they do so?
Once they sell?
Once they do so.
Oh, do so.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you the story quickly about one of my clients just a few weeks ago, where she was bringing her three businesses to the table. One she clearly had a passion for, one was kind of on hold because of COVID, and one was just a struggle bus. And she's a power source, right? But in talking to her, it wasn't where her passion lies. And her husband was there, right there next to her, saying, you know, you can do this, babe. I believe you. And I looked at her and I said, you know, I believe in you too. You can do this, but you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah.
And that was the permission that she needed to just be like, I can do the thing that I really have the passion for, the thing that gets me up in the morning. I don't have to do this struggle side anymore. So that's what I do. I come in and we lay the numbers bare naked on the table of what is really going on. And we connect that to what's going on in your heart and making sure that it's aligned. And that might not be what accountants talk about, but that's what I do.
Great. So I would encourage everybody to, of course, visit your website. You have several of them. So I'm gonna say your primary website or your primary branding website, and then I know there's a link you want us to share. Megan Dahle, DAHLE.com. And I know that you would like us to visit gettingyourmoneyright.com because you have a little something for us.
Yes. Yeah. Pop in there. And it is a free guide to really starting to understand, like, what numbers do I really need to know? Because I'll tell you a secret. You don't need to know all of them. There's just a few key ones that you do. And that will start you on the road to being really good friends with your numbers without getting all sketchy about them. Like, ew, gross.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll say that URL one more time. gettingyourmoneyright.com. So Megan Dahle, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been an honor, an education, and a heck of a fun time.
It has been a fun time, Adam. Thank you so much. This is just a hoot.
And for everybody listening, I trust you've enjoyed today's episode. Please be sure to visit our website at www.businesscreatorsradioshow.com, where you will find a plethora of episodes covering a breadth and depth of topics relevant to business creators just like you. Be sure to subscribe via your favorite network so you get fresh episodes right to your front door. And until next time, have a great day. Take care.